This is Mike Farron from SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 15 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast from the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com. My special guest this week is Bill Bray. Bill was the last first-round pick, 13th overall, for the Montreal Expos in 2004 after attending the College of William & Mary and spent his six-year Major League career making 258 appearances for the Washington Nationals and Cincinnati Reds. The pride of somewhat nearby Virginia Beach, I am excited to speak with this former Major Leaguer. Bill, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you sharing a little bit of time this evening on a Sunday night. I greatly appreciate your time, so thank you.
No problem. I have to be on.
First place I want to start is many in the audience probably last heard from you when you announced your retirement this spring. You know, you'd spent a little time with the Washington Nationals in spring training. I kind of wanted to start with what are you up to post-career in baseball?
Well, just before I retired, I had enrolled back at school at the College of William Mary while I was rehabbing from shoulder surgery. And when I found out that I had torn my labrum for the second time, I decided to retire and continue on with my education. So I took summer school, and now back in fall classes. I've got 16 credits this semester, so it's been busy. And then I'm also helping coach at one of the local high schools in Williamsburg.
What's it like coaching some of the high schoolers now, a little bit after your career now?
It's a lot of fun, and I've been amazed at how much better these young men are playing the game of baseball. I mean, they really are way farther ahead than I feel like where I was at the same age, and where the level of play was when I was in high school, 15 years ago. I think we had three kids going over 90 miles an hour in the district this year, and I can remember back in high school, like, you didn't have that. You maybe had one guy that was thrown in the upper 80s. So, I mean, the game has gotten so much better. They turn double play now routinely. I mean, it's just, these kids are so much better. They play so much more, so.
Is that what you would attribute it to, is just playing more, at a younger age?
I think so. I mean, you've seen a proliferation of travel baseball, AAU select baseball. These kids are growing up playing 60, 70, 80 games a year now. And when they get to the high school season, I mean, most of the kids have played together coming up through the years. So, I mean, they really have improved. It's very impressive.
I have a nephew who's about 15 now, and it's just pretty amazing to see how good he is and the kind of competition that he plays against as well. So it's funny you say that. I just found that interesting. Kind of shifting off of that a little bit, you hold a unique position in Montreal Expos, Washington Nationals, trivia, folklore, history, whatever the word is I'm looking for. What is it like being such a high draft pick from, maybe a smaller baseball school? And what was your draft day experience like?
It was an incredible experience. And I mean, I was just absolutely honored and floored to have been drafted by the Montreal Expos with the 13th pick. I had talked with the Diamondbacks previously before the draft and thought I might go 15th. And then I hadn't really talked at all to the Expos when they drafted me. And I did get a chance to go up to Canada and visit Quebec and Montreal, and it was a really awesome experience. And being drafted by the Expos was kind of a unique experience in the fact that they were owned by Major League Baseball, and they were negotiating at that point to go to D.C. And even at that time, they were talking about maybe Norfolk, Virginia. I remember I got to meet the mayor of Norfolk at the time, and they were talking about their pitch to bring the Expos to Norfolk. So it was an interesting time.
So where did you think the team was going to end up?
I always felt D.C. It seemed like the best place. I mean, the market's huge. They had had a baseball before, of course, with the Senators, and it just seemed like such a great opportunity to bring baseball back to the nation's capital. And, that seemed like the front runner. And they had a stadium that could support a Major League team, from the get-go.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, you made your debut with the Nationals in 2006, But unfortunately, shortly after arriving in the majors, you were a major part of probably the first blockbuster trade in team history. What do you remember from being traded, and what is the process like of being traded for those of us kind of on the outside of baseball?
You know, it was funny because Chad Cordero and I, we had gone down the Nag's Head for the All-Star break just to kind of hang out and unwind a little bit. And my wife was there, and we were sitting at a restaurant one night. I said, you know what, I think I'm getting traded. And he looked at me and just kind of said, no way, you know, you're not getting traded. And we got back, and I think we were heading to Pittsburgh, and we got to the field, and all of a sudden they said, you know, Bray, Majeski, Clayton, we want to see you. And we just kind of looked at each other and said, all right, guys, we'll see you later. Because there was no reason to call all of us into the office. And they just basically thanked us for everything we had done and that they had an offer they couldn't refuse and that we were traded to the Reds. It was a very weird feeling. You know, on one hand, you kind of feel like that team maybe had given up on you, which isn't the case, but you feel like they're getting rid of you, like they don't want you anymore. And then at the same time, you know that you're going to a new team that really wants you. And so it's a very weird feeling. And then walking into the Reds clubhouse was very strange because the first person I saw was Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, I'm 22 at that point, and you know, I'd grown up playing Ken Griffey Jr. baseball on Super Nintendo.
As we all did, yeah.
Yeah. How do you introduce yourself to Ken Griffey Jr.? I mean, one of the 10 best players in baseball history. I was like, do I call him Ken? Mr. Griffey? I had no idea. And, you know, it was an incredible experience, and it was like going to the major leagues all over again. You know, you get to the Nationals, and you're nervous, and you want to make a good impression, and you're finally starting to get comfortable with that team, and you're not walking on eggshells quite as much, and then you get traded.
Well, now I got to ask, what would you call Griffey?
Griff. I don't. The first time I met him, I didn't say anything. I just shook his hand and said, nice to meet you. You know, I kind of stumbled out, you know, nice to meet you.
Right.
It's an honor, you know. Oh, my God, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. type moment.
What kind of guy is Jr., speaking of which?
He's a great guy.
Is
he? He was a great teammate, a lot of fun to be around. Just an amazing talent. Yeah, just watching him on a day-to-day basis. I mean, one of the coolest things I ever did was I got to shag baseballs on a daily basis from Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah. I'd
run around the outfield catching fly balls.
That's pretty crazy, actually, to think about. You're playing this video game, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're shagging flies from him in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to ask, what made you think that you might get traded?
I don't know. I just had a feeling. I didn't have any reason to think, because it didn't make much sense at the time. You know, most teams hold on to their first-round picks for a while before trading them. But, you know, like Jim Bowden said, you know, it was an offer that they couldn't refuse. And, I mean, looking back, it was a good offer for the Nationals because they truly were trading a good shortstop and two relief pitchers at the time for, you know, two everyday players.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was a very, I think, a lopsided trade. And I don't think you really see that anymore, is trading relievers for position players. You know, it's hard to quantify a guy that goes out there and plays every day, you know, compared to somebody like me that might pitch in 80 games max.
Yeah, that is a good point. Although, just from this perspective, you know, as a diehard Nationals fan from back then, I remember being just floored that the Nationals parted with you. I mean, like you said, teams don't part with their first-round pick, and you and Cordero were going to be the back end of the bullpen for the next 10 years, and so forth and so on. So, well, that does lead into my next question, which is, you know, you were a career relief pitcher. I'm kind of curious what it's like, you know, to pick your brain a little bit about what it's like to be a relief pitcher versus a starter and how you prepare yourself every day, you know, with the chance that, you know, like you said, you could pitch literally every other day of the season.
Being a relief pitcher is a grind. It's a lot of fun because you have the opportunity to pitch every night. And that being said, you're in tune and you're aware of everything that's happening in every game. And I prepared the same way every day. I created a routine. It was almost like Groundhog's Day for me. Like, I did the exact same thing every day to make sure that I knew I was as best prepared as I could be to pitch that night. And because that really helps your confidence. If you know that you've done everything you can do to be prepared to succeed, then you can go out there and just do the best you can. And if you succeed, great. If you don't, well, you knew you did everything you could to put yourself in that position to succeed. Whereas with starters, they have their set routine, but I feel like they get more opportunities to just kind of to breathe. But that being said, they always complain that if they had a bad game, they had to wait 5 days to pitch again, where the next night I was up and going. So we were able to forget a little bit quicker as a reliever.
You spoke of what your routine was. What can you give us a little bit of insight into what kind of your daily routine was to get ready for the game?
I usually showed up to the field around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And John Wetland suggested when I was with the Nationals of creating that break between your home life and life at the field. So I did the crossword puzzle. I had a cup of coffee and kind of created that separation between whatever was going on at home or outside the field and what was going on at the field. And then I'd go into the gym and I'd loosen up riding the bike. I'd get stretched, get my arms stretched. Then we'd go out and run and play catch. And then it was time for batting practice. And then we'd come in, have dinner. And usually, a lot of times we play dominoes, we play cribbage right after that, because it was probably like a 45-minute period between like the end of when you would eat and when the game would start if you were home. So we'd relax a little bit, and then we'd walk down to the bullpen, and I'd grab another cup of coffee as I was going to the bullpen.
Mm. And then how would you stay focused during the game?
Well, you could kind of zone out for a few innings and just watch and enjoy. But starting around the fifth inning, I usually stretched at the beginning of the fifth inning, started getting my body moving, started really paying much closer attention to how the game was going, whether the starter, how many pitches he had, who was coming up. And as a left-hand specialist, I always had to be aware of what bats they had on the bench. Because if I came in to face a left-handed batter, especially somebody that was towards the bottom of the order, I always knew I was going to get a right-handed batter pinch hitting. So, and then you just kind of watch the game. You just pay attention to the game. And you get a feeling, you get to know your managers and what situations you're going to be used in.
So, the next topic I kind of wanted to ask you about was, unfortunately, during your career, I think it was 2009, you had to undergo Tommy John surgery. We've seen an epidemic kind of this season, the last couple seasons, of pitchers undergoing Tommy John surgery. And I think the fans, at least from our perspective, just say, all right, well, he's going to go get Tommy John surgery, and he'll be back in a year, no problem. Can you talk to us about what it's like to actually go through the rehab process and what the surgery is like and how difficult and grueling it is?
It's devastating as a pitcher to tear your elbow up and realize that you're going to be missing a year. Because while they do have a lot of success, there's still that unknown. I mean, as we've seen this year with a couple guys that have had to have a second Tommy John or have had their second Tommy John fail and are looking at the possibility of a third Tommy John, you just never know. And so there's a fear from that uncertainty that comes with it. The rehab itself is just a marathon. It's 6 days a week. It's 3 hours a day, maybe a little more, a little less some days, for 12 months. And, you just try to, you set little goals and you try to achieve those goals and at the same time stay in shape. And for me personally, it was very hard to watch baseball that year because I felt like I should be there and that I should be playing and that was my teammates out on the field and that I wasn't there to help them. It was a very weird, disappointing feeling to miss a full year like that.
Well, you said you spend about 3 hours a day rehabbing and doing your thing. What do you do to pass the time the rest of the time? I know most of the time you're doing it at, smaller towns, maybe in Arizona or Florida, mm-hmm. Kind of in the Gulf Coast League and areas like that. What do you do to pass the time?
Well, you go nuts. you have to find a hobby. I wouldn't suggest golf, but...
Right, with an elbow injury, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I enjoy reading. My wife was with me, so we would travel around and, you try to find, fun restaurants to eat at. You try to have... One thing that helped us is we tried to leave, one errand a day to run. So if we had to go to the grocery store one day and Target, we wouldn't do both things in one day because you'd run out of stuff to do. So we tried to have one thing to do every day. Because you end up with a lot of downtime. So, we went to see movies. We found at the Dollar Movie Theaters in Florida, in Sarasota. And, so we saw all the movies at the Dollar Movie Theater. you know, I look back now and go, gosh, what did I do with all that time? Because, you know, now I'm so busy, I feel like that. I'm like, man, we really did have a lot of time to waste.
Well, and it's interesting to hear the other side of the perspective. We, like I said, you know, we assume, all right, just get the surgery, no problem. You'll throw harder. Everything will be great. And, you know, like you said, that's not always the way it kind of works out. So,
right. I mean, I was very lucky. I had excellent doctors, excellent physical therapists. I mean, the people that worked, I mean, the trainers, I mean, God, everywhere I went was awesome. And so, I mean, I'm really thankful, even with the shoulder surgery, just everybody I worked with was great. So,
well, and if I have it correctly, I think you returned in 2010 from the Tommy John surgery, which was the season that you got to pitch in the postseason with the Cincinnati Reds.
Mm-hmm.
We are beginning the playoffs this week, kind of depending on when everybody's downloading or listening and so forth. Can you give a little bit of a perspective and describe what the difference is between, you know, the atmosphere and the magnitude between, you know, one of the regular season games and a playoff game?
Oh, I don't know how to explain that. I mean, it was like 10 times the adrenaline rush of pitching in a regular season game. I don't think my heart has ever beat harder and faster than walking on the mound in Philadelphia. And just the immense sense of pride when they introduce you and you run up to the line and, you know, high-five your teammates and you stand on the foul line for line for the national anthem. I mean, and they do the flyover and the national, just incredible experience. I mean, I'll never forget it. And, you know, I really hope for the national sake that they don't get no hit in a playoff game this year, you know, like we did. But now looking back, it's one of the highlights of my career. It was rough to go through at the time, but there's not too many guys that can say that they've been part of a no-hitter in postseason history.
Yeah, that's, you know, pretty cool, quite frankly, to be able to say. You mentioned the Nationals. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't get your take on them as they enter the playoffs. It looks like they're going to face either San Francisco or Pittsburgh, kind of depending on the play-in game. Thoughts on the Nationals?
I think they have an excellent shot. They've got a great pitching staff. They have excellent hitters. You know, they're a good team. They're coached well. You know, I have a lot of friends on that team, so I would like to see them do very well, especially to beat St. Louis. I would love for them to beat St. Louis, just badly beat St. Louis. If they play San Francisco, I would say do not relax, because San Francisco, they win. They're winners. You know, they're similar to St. Louis in that fact that you just can't relax in them. And then with Pittsburgh, they're a solid young team. You know, they're up and coming, and they're good, and they're scrappy, and they're hungry. So, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch the playoffs this year.
From a baseball insider perspective, what one thing are you, or a couple things would you be looking for that maybe, you know, those of us on the outside would not be looking at during these games?
You know, I mean, that's a good question. Bullpen management, you know, as a pitcher is crucial, especially in the playoffs, and then how they use their bench bats. You know, timely pinch hitting. I watch it just like a fan. You know, base running, whether they're aggressive with runners in motion, such as hit and runs or steals, and, you know, how they bunt, you know, play small ball, and you know, whichever team executes the best is the one that usually wins. You try to put pressure on the opposing team and make them make plays, whether it's laying down a sacrifice bunt, making them make a play, or moving runners from first to second, you know, hitting behind runners as a batter and getting the guy over with one out, put him in scoring position. It's the team that executes the best that usually ends up winning. And if you can put pressure on the opposing team and force them to make plays in tough situations, then I think they're doing the best job.
Yeah, that's definitely certainly the case. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. As a former lefty specialist, do you think Jerry Blevins makes the postseason roster?
No, I don't know how he's done this year. Could you tell me? Now, I know Jerry, and I think he's a great guy, and he's an excellent talent. So, but I'm not aware of how he's pitched this year.
And I don't have the numbers in front of me. He's been terrific against left-handers, but he's struggled a little bit against righties, and he's had a couple of outings that have, you know, maybe when he's, you know, taken one for the team, that has, you know, had his ERA jump up more in the 4.5 range this year. But he's been real good against lefties. It's kind of, it looks like it could be either he or Soriano as that last spot in the bullpen right now.
Right. I go with, and I know they've got Thornton on the roster and Detweiler. So, I go with Jerry because there's always that big lefty, coming up in the bat. Whether, if you play San Francisco, you're going to have Brandon Belt in the lineup and Crawford. Sandoval, if you want to turn him around, make him hit right-handed. And then I'm trying to think with Pittsburgh, you have Neil Walker, you might want to turn around. So there's always advantages to having left-handers. But at the same time, that's a tough decision. And it doesn't mean if you leave him off the postseason roster for the first round, you can always put him on in the second round.
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have 8, 9, 10 guys for 7 or 8 spots.
But, I mean, as somebody that knows Jerry, I hope he's, for him, I hope he's on the team. Absolutely.
Yeah, I hope he grabs a spot somehow because, like you said, there are plenty of opportunities, I think, in a 5-game series where you could want a pure lefty who's really done a nice job this year.
Yeah, especially in the National League where you're talking about so many pinch hitters.
Very good point. So before I let you go, Bill, I would like to get your predictions. I'd love to get the play-in game predictions. And then we'll go to the World Series. How about that? San Francisco and Pittsburgh, first game.
San Francisco.
How come?
Like I said, they just seem to win. They're well coached, but also being from the National League Central, I wouldn't mind seeing Pittsburgh. But I think San Francisco, if I've got one game, I'm going with San Francisco's pitching and stuff.
Yeah, I tend to agree. How about in the American League, kind of the upstart Kansas City Royals and the slumping Oakland Athletics?
I'm going Kansas City.
Yeah, I think so, too. That should be a great game.
Unless you're an Athletics fan, I think you have to root for Kansas City. I mean, they haven't been in the playoffs in, 29 years?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason his name is Big Game James, too. I mean, he's got to come through in that, wild card game as well.
And they've got a good... It's a good offense. Those guys can absolutely hit. So,
and if you can get to the 7th, 8th, or 9th inning, that bullpen is very good for them, too. So, and how about a World Series prediction, if I could?
I'm hoping Nationals or Royals.
Okay. I would be happy with that. I'm not sure the TV would be particularly happy, but we certainly will be.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think the TV's happy unless it's like the Yankees and Dodgers.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a good
something
point
along those lines, or the Red Sox and Dodgers. That unless it's something if it's a regional game, I think from TV's perspective, the worst thing that could happen would be Orioles and Nationals.
Yeah,
East Coast Subway.
It'd be the greatest for this area, and like you said, it would be the worst for Major League Baseball. Yeah, you're exactly right.
As far as revenues, but from a pure baseball perspective, at least from my perspective, I'm hoping for the Royals and Nationals. Two teams that. The Nationals having not been there, and then the Royals, it's been so long. I think that would be good just for the game itself.
And two teams that have built the right way, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, well, Bill, thank you so much for sharing so much time with me on a Sunday night, a school night for you, as it turns out. I want to give you kind of a place here to plug your Twitter, plug whatever you've got going on, where we can find you, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, @WPBray, that I love talking baseball or just sports in general. So, follow me and hit me up and, we'll talk on. And, I love answering questions. Anybody that's willing to listen, I'm happy to, give my opinion. So,
yeah, you've been very kind to me the few times I've reached out to you on Twitter. So, I definitely appreciate it. And, thank you again for joining me tonight. I, thank you for your insights. Oh. And it was definitely, great making your acquaintance and talking to you a little bit.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. Anytime.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good night.
And that was my conversation with Bill Bray. I want to thank him for graciously sharing so much time with me tonight on what was a school night. And he even told me off air he had a test. So thank you so much, Bill, for sharing so much time with me. I appreciate it. So before we wrap episode 15, I want to remind everybody that the Nats GM show is now available on iTunes. So please rate and review us, as this helps us gain new listeners and bigger audience. So please do that. Also, the show is actively seeking sponsors. So if you or someone you know is interested in sponsoring any part of the Nats GM show, please check natsgm.com for details. Thank you for listening. And until next time, cheers, everybody.